Michael.
I'm here.
How are you, Mike Cremins?
Living the dream, man.
Yeah, crazy times. We're going through a lot right now. But I thought we could do a little diversion now from what's going on in the world and just talk a little about you. And, you know, congratulate you on being voted into the Mercer County Tennis Hall of Fame. Although the induction is being postponed, it's quite an honor and well-deserving. But I want to talk about your Hall of Fame career a little later in our talk. I wanted to just ask you a few questions about, you know, where you grew up and how you got started in tennis. And so if you could just let us know, you know, I know you grew up in Monmouth County, but whereabouts?
I grew up in Little Silver, New Jersey, on Rumson Road. There were two courts, I guess two houses over from me. You know, I had some tennis courts right next near my house where I could, you know, play pretty much as I wanted and, you know, fell in love with the game after I played all the other sports, you know, baseball, basketball, football, and soccer. And when, you know, I got a chance to just sort of work on my craft as much as I want, you know, I fell in love with it.
Did you have a certain pro that you worked with back then, or were you taking group lessons?
You know, I can't even remember running into someone, how it all started. There was two pros. I actually remember their names, Mr. Slanker and Mr. I think it was Bruno, and they were doing a lot of what I did at the Skylar Tennis Courts in Yardley. They offered, you know, pretty much, you know, actually weekend lessons. And I would take a weekend, you know, 1 hour lesson with them. And I was a little jealous of my sisters. They, you know, they were getting into it. And then they introduced me to a gentleman named John Sestito, who was 4 years older than me. So when I met him, he was a senior in high school and I was in eighth grade, and he taught me how to play and just, you know, played a lot with me. And then he introduced me to his friends, and everybody was pretty much older than me, so I was always, you know, so to speak, learning and being mentored, and it was awesome. I actually would drive over with them to Fort Monmouth, you know, in the neighboring town in Oceanport, and the Army base, Fort Monmouth, and they would have a tennis court, and they would leave the lights on all night long, and we could play pretty much as late as we wanted to, you know, pre-9/11. And we played just all the time, every day in the summer, and we loved it.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, is that where you started to learn, you know, to hit with heavy topspin right away, or was that something that that you had to naturally, as you got older, perfected that?
I've always been a big believer in, heavy topspin, but when I, you know, ran into Youngmin Kwon in the early 90s, he was a big baseliner, and he was, you know, in my opinion, a heavy topspin player, and I just, you know, loved watching him play, and so that's when, my game sort of developed and, you know, into a heavy topspin player.
Okay.
More so with, you know, following him. And then my favorite players, Rafa Nadal, and, you know, very close second being, you know, pretty much every other player on the tour. Because it's just so much fun to watch, you know, just great tennis in the Tennis Channel.
Yeah.
I watch it every day.
Okay. So were you playing, like, Eastern, you know, junior tournaments at any point?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I would go up to Mountain Lakes, and I won a few tournaments there, and then I would go to Kendall Park. Kendall Park in Middletown was really a a mecca for great tennis, the great Dave Lomke and Mickey Cook, and I think even Gambino played there, and Bobby Sullivan was a great pro there, and it just had a gazillion tennis courts.
Yeah, I was going to talk about, you know, when you played high school tennis, there were four nationally ranked juniors all playing at the same time as you, and you just named Mickey Cook and Dave Lomke, and then my friend Jay Narenberg, and then Chris Gambino. I mean, it must have been so difficult to break through that first four core, you know, when you were playing high school tennis.
Absolutely. I mean, it was great because I was friends with Dave Lomke, so I would say good friends, but tennis friends. You know, when we crossed paths, he was, you know, just amazing at tennis, and Bruce the Dad was in there as well.
Yeah.
So there were so many. Good, you know, there's a couple of players from Home Bells, while I forget their names off the top of my head, who were very good as well. And it was just, Mono County was just really a great, you know, area for tennis, being that, you know, those 5 to 7 guys were just dynamite. And there's actually a couple other guys in Manalapan who were great too. But, you know, Dave was sort of the best of them all, in my opinion. And then, you know, again, Jay Nerber was right there with Chris Gambino. They won 2 state championships as well. And Mickey was, a friend of mine that I, you know, went a semester with at Rutgers with. And he was just, you know, so dominant. I mean, I think it was a 19-1 Rutgers team, and Mickey played one and was amazing. And a great guy, too. Just such a great, friendly person.
Yeah, so that probably was the peak of Monmouth County tennis, because Lomke and Narenberg and Gambino all won the state championship, and Mickey Cook was the runner-up 1 year, all within like 3 years. So that had to be that was a difficult time for you coming up to go against these, you know, elite national level players. But so how were your teams in high school? You had Red Bank Regional.
You know, it was pretty neat. And again, I fell in love with the game sort of, you know, my 8th grade summer into my freshman year of high school. So I just really got into it then. And so my freshman year, I started rotating, playing just doubles. And we had a new coach, and he was great, Steven Johnson. He was just a fabulous coach. I loved him. And, You know, it was also much fun, you know, although we only had 3 high school courts and Red Bank, all the, so to speak, strong players went to Red Bank Catholic or Christian Brothers, and so they were always the powerhouses.
Yeah.
And so Narenberg played for Red Bank Catholic, and then obviously Mickey and Gambino eventually? Yeah, played for them as well. And so, you know, we had good teams. You know, my freshman year, Matt Mazuka played one, and I eventually got to number 2 singles and, you know, continued to challenge and just, you know, just got better, and my game got together. Then Matt graduated, and then I played first singles sophomore through senior year. And we got a little bit better every year. You know, more and more people would start to come out for the team. A lot of my friends joined. Rick Horn joined, and we got, you know, so to speak, better as I got better and would, you know, play. We played Mark Leschley from Princeton, and he was dynamite, the president or CEO of UTR now. And so now there's sort of need to know him. But, you know, each year we got better.
Yeah. So after graduation, were you recruited by any schools?
You know, I was. You know, I looked at the College of New Jersey. And I looked at Seton Hall, and I looked at Rutgers. And the Rutgers coach, Dick Johnson, was, you know, an older man. And, he got me in. But it was, honestly, it's just too overwhelming to go to a school where I'm taking buses. And it just, you know, I wasn't ready to leave home and play tennis and, you know, handle college. Excuse me, but again, it was great to play there with J.K. Nicar and Mickey Cook and so many other great players as well.
Yeah, was Bob Berger the coach at Seton Hall?
No. The great, you mean the great NBA player?
Yeah, because I think he coached there a few years.
He might have. He was a pro at Little Silver Tennis Club back, you know, when I was in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, and I got a chance to know him then. And so I don't know what, you know, when he was at Seton Hall, but I met him at Little Silver Tennis Club. He was a great guy. What a, you know, what a great tennis player he was.
Yeah. So you end up at QCNJ, and you played there for what, for 3 years?
For 2 years. I went to Brookdale, and that was great. That was perfect for me, just because, you know, again, we, you know, the school schedule was light. I delivered pizzas and, you know, other things, and then, you know, just played a fair amount of tennis on my own. And I got to see John and Matt Nizuka. I still continued my, so to speak, you know, high school life with those guys. I got to still maintain my relationships with my tennis buddies. And then, you know, then my family in 89 moved to California, and I came back, you know, we moved there in February of 89. I came back in September of 89 to TCNJ, or Prince State at the time. And Dr. Mike Lionone was the coach, and he was a fabulous coach. And it was just such a great experience at TCNJ, you know, just all aspects of it. I was ready for college and tennis, and you know,
and
a lot of good wins there.
And did you play number one the first year you were there?
I did. I played number one for the 2 years that I was there.
Okay. And you ended up being an All-American, right?
No, that is actually incorrect. I had wins over numerous players from sophomore, from sophomore, and then I think my best win was a guy who was like from Skidmore. He was 19 in the country, and so my top ranking, I believe, was 39, and my doubles ranking was 17. But, you know, that was unfortunately in my second year there. And I say that because I was just, so to speak, getting a taste of, you know, the level that you needed to be at in order to, you know, to break through.
Okay. But you were named the, NJAC Player of the Year in 1991.
I didn't know that, or I don't remember that, but NJAC was really, honestly, not very too much of a challenge.
Well, I'm looking at it right now. You were Player of the Year. So.
Was I? Okay. And, you know, that I think the College of New Jersey has won that division like 25 years in a row or something. So,
yeah.
Fortunately for us, it was an easy division, but the great, you know, players in D3 were, you know, were from Swarthmore and Williams and a lot of the, you know, where Reed Newhall went, Claremont and a lot of the Pomona Pitzer, those schools were UC San Diego. Yeah.
Where Vivek played in Chicago is a top Division III school too.
Yeah. They would always have one or two good players.
Yeah. So when did you start teaching tennis out of this Mercer County, Bucks County area?
Yeah, I guess, you know, I moved back to California briefly after, you know, I guess in 91 or 92. And then I spoke to Colleen Cosgrove on the phone. You know, I loved living in California and playing all the tournaments that just didn't pay the bills. And my mom was, you know, basically saying, hey, man, it's time to get a job. And so I don't know how I came across Colleen, but, I just connected with her. She gave me a job, you know, for the summer. And I already had an apartment, so I went and worked for Princeton Tennis Program for 10 or 11 weeks. And I practiced a lot with the great Bill Mountford. And he offered me, he got the junior director job at Hopewell, and I worked there for about 18 months, and then I got the director job for, I guess it was sort of the head pro, but they called it, you know, director of tennis. I wasn't the executive director at back at Princeton Tennis Program, and I did that for 6 months, And then I went to Pensbury, you know, then the Pensbury job opened up and I went there, and I was there for 8 years, and then I've been in, you know, director of Y and Tennis for the last 90 years.
Okay. So, I want to talk about your Hall of Fame career at Mercer County. So you have won 63 Mercer County titles. So, I'm not going to go through them all. 9-time men's singles champion, 8-time doubles champion, 12-time 35 and over champion, 13-time Stone Age champion, and there's plenty more titles. I just don't have time to list them all.
Sure.
Does a particular match or final jump out of you of the 63 tournaments you have won?
When you say that, I guess two actually, you know, ironically come to mind. The one, I played a gentleman named Chris Chang, and I won the first set 7-6, and I had match point. And I hit a ball, and I thought it hit the line, and Marvin signaled it as good. And then Chris called it out, and then Marvin said up. I couldn't see it, so, you know, I guess it was out. And then the kid went on to beat me, in the next set.
Right.
And then the second one was playing Pearson, Matt Pearson. And he was so good, I felt like a rag doll, but ironically, he broke a racket and broke strings, and then he was up 3-2, and then defaulted to me. So I sort of think it was good karma in those two. Those are the first two that pop out at me, and how funny, you know, I lost a close one, but I sort of feel like I had a little favor from the heavens to win the next one, to tie the great Rick Strand golf and have 9 titles.
Yeah. So if people who are listening, they don't know who Matt Pearson is. He literally served 140 miles an hour, and his kick serve, I think, could go over the fence. I mean, it was uncanny how big he could play. So that's a keeper. he really could bring it.
He was a great part.
What would you say your greatest win ever was? Your best win?
Wow. Jeez, I don't even... Oh, man. I don't...
So you probably won over 100 tournaments, I would assume, right?
Yeah. You know, you know, I don't... You know, I don't really have one that sticks in my mind, because I've enjoyed, you know, just winning, you know, so many, like getting to the finals in the Crying in 1991, in the doubles finals, winning that one was a great one. I beat Jason Kasser. That was a good win, being down 6-3, 5-2, 30 love. He ended up defaulting, but I sort of think I had his heart, and he had beat me 4 or 5 times in a row, and, you know, I came from a small college, and he played at Ohio State. And I think the world of him. I mean, every time I play with him, I learn something. So just to, you know, compete with someone of that level and even go a third set with him was great. But to beat him, you know, I beat Mark Fitzcaro, who had match points against me, and I beat him in Bethlehem. And, you know, he was just a single state champion. And then maybe, you know, beating Mark Gretsch at Frosty Hollow. That was a good win because, again, you know, he played at Wimbledon and, he had, ATP points or whatever, and, you know, to beat, you know, someone, you know, who was, you know, a big time favorite, and then to, you know, upset them. Those are, you know, just a few that I enjoyed winning. But,
yeah. Those are all time wins. Those are great.
Yeah.
Wins. Yeah. So,
and then, you know what, the one that you enjoyed too, the one that we had I won in Jersey City. I forget that guy's name, who was a runner-up, you know, who was the guy in 77, New Jersey singles runner-up.
Fritz Bearing won it in 77. I can't remember who the runner-up was in
77.
Yeah.
It was, again, maybe it might be a few years later, too, but I beat him in Jersey City, and he was making a comeback, and but, you know, it was a good win. I won 6-7, 6-0, 6-1, once they sort of figured out, you know, what was going on, you know, I got my game together. But, you know, that was, I won that tournament and beat Jay Kennett-Carr, a friend of mine. And so that was, you know, a good tournament win, you know. So that was cool.
Yeah, so back to Mercer County. I calculated that I was involved in 9.5% of your tournament wins, two with you and four losses to you. So I played a small role in your historic run of 63 championships. So, I just want to talk about the 2 years that we played together. And we hit and we trained, and I really did learn a lot from you those 2 years, because you taught me how to prepare for matches. And I just would go out and play, and I didn't really think about before I played, you know, and how to analyze and think about the balls and think about, you know, what to do. And you had me thinking a different way. And those years were the best I ever did singles-wise. I remember one year I was in like seven finals, and I won three of them, which was really good for me. So you did, you know, you did help me during those 2 years. But I also want to talk about our Atlantic Coast Cup team in 2014, because, as you know, we weren't on that cup for like 15 years, and I recruited this, you know, powerhouse team to try to win it, because I didn't think, you know, I was getting frustrated. I'd been playing since 2005, and we just couldn't win. So who did I ask to play number one in the deciding match? You, okay? So I remember laying in bed the night before, and I said, I'm going with Crane at number one. He's the biggest winner I know. So it was you at one, Josh Sarner at two, Al Hernandez at three, and Kennett-Carr at four. And you won a huge match, 10-8 in the breaker, right? And that put us up 3-1, and before Nuremberg and Hoffman clinched it. So for me, that was one of the, you know, biggest matches for the Middle States in recent memory, because otherwise, if you lose that match, and then it's coming down to Sarner and Al, I don't know. It can go either way, because they were both in dogfights. So that was a huge, huge win. So I just wanted to bring that up again, that I did tab you as our number one player, and I think was the biggest match in the Middle States in a very long time. The other thing I wanted to mention, did you watch The Last Dance with Michael Jordan?
Absolutely.
Everyone. You watched everyone. So I'm watching this, right, and I've been, you know, playing sports a long time, all different sports. You know, I grew up in Clark, and guys that played in college, some guys that were drafted, and I'm watching this, and I'm thinking about, I said, you know who Jordan's drive to win reminded me of, and it's you. I said, I don't know anyone that loves to win as much as you, even Michael Jordan. So I have to say that's part of your greatness, is that, you know, your desire to win is like nobody I've ever met, you know. So I feel like I was like the Steve Kerr in our relationship, but I looking back, it's all good, and, you know, I really respect the way that you approach the game. So I have another question for you.
Thank you for you know, I enjoyed those times we got together and played in the morning, and I'm getting up at 7 a.m. tomorrow and playing at Mercer County again. And then in regards to the that match, it's a great honor to play in front of Josh Sarner, who is, you know, one of the toughest players out there, as well as Al. There's no one who works harder at his game and still teaches 40 to 50 hours a week. And then, again, Jay Kennett-Carr, actually just this past year, you know, beat me three times in the last 2 years to take a lead up on me in the last 30 years, 6-5. So they're all good friends and great players. And it was truly an honor to be, so to speak, sacrificed in front of them, because I think they're all stronger players than me. And so, you know, to have pulled one out in sort of, you know, be, you know, on the front line for you is, you know, truly an honor, and you know, because I know any one of those guys would have beaten the guy I played. But you know, again, I have no doubt that Al would have beaten Bill, and he was playing so well, and Josh would have won as well, and you know, so I was just glad to contribute, and it was such a great team that you put with the likes of Fred Perrin and so many great players on that team.
Yeah, that was a special moment for Luke, and you came through. So I was so happy. I was so happy for you, and I was so happy for us to finally have got our name on that cup. So I want to ask you about your underhand serve, because I've been doing it over the last year, and I've had some mixed results, and I want to talk to you about how you first started doing it and, you know, your opinion of it.
You know, I did send you that picture on that from that church down the street from me. Did you get that?
I did, yeah.
I was fascinated, and to this day, I probably should have went to the church and asked. He put that on the sign, and for anybody listening, it just said, you know, I actually don't even remember, but it said an underhand serve ? And you know, so in that regard, Mike, I love the underhand serve. I think this whole world is about uniqueness and being different, and but at the same time playing inside the rules. And that's the thing that I think is saddest about it, is that, you know, people think the underhand serve is like a bunt to break up a no-hitter, or an onside kick when you're winning by 27. Or, you know, whatever it may be, the underhandedness of the name of it contributes to its, you know, social, you know, dislike. And personally, I've had ridiculously great results from it. I've been down, you know, against numerous great players and have come back and won because it threw them off their game. But fundamentally, I honestly believe that that there's a way that if you put enough spin on it, it literally could roll to your opponent and be an ace every time,
right?
Especially on grass or clay or other, you know, surfaces that, you know, are conducive to massive spin. So I think we'll see that, you know, whether it be 50 or 100 years from now. I do think that it will have to be outlawed. Because I do think there's a way to hit such ridiculous amount of spin. I also think that it's a terrific complement to, you know, people like Kyrgios, who has a 140 mile an hour serve, and Nadal's, you know, 15 feet behind the baseline, and if you can only hit it a foot over the net, you know, it draws him in and makes him play outside of his comfort level.
Yeah.
It's sad that, you know, I've played against Marco Cacopardo, and he took offense to it. And I've played against other, you know, Americans who took it, you know, like it was a shot to their ego. But I've also played against South Americans and Europeans, and they laughed, and they hit it right back at me, and they hit it better, you know.
Right.
What I mean?
So at Germantown last year, Bill Dancer and I played against a guy's name was Carlos Gomez Diaz. I think he's the number one guy in the 50s
yeah.
in the country. He's a top 200 player. Well, I served it, I don't know, 10 times to him. And I won most of the points. And after the match, we happened to be in the bar with him, and he said, that was a great tactic against me. You know,
yeah.
Because if you hit my strike zone, I'm going to hit a winner. So
yeah.
He complimented me. So I went out in the national semifinals last year. I won't name the person I did it against, but he was a top 100 player in the world at one time, and he flipped out. He flipped out during the match. He hit me three times. It was a bad, bad experience.
Yeah.
And he yelled at me, and I was like, oh, my God, what did I get myself into? So I had consecutive days, I had two completely different things happen to me doing that underhand serve.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, like I said, and again, an American versus a South American, and the South American respected it and understood it as a tactic, whereas an American, you know, was pompous and acted like he deserves better, like you should hit it to him so that he, could could win easily. And so it's a very, you know, a lot of times I don't hit it because I don't want a, you know, a fight on my hands. But a lot of times in order to get it to someone's backhand, I mean, more and more of these college players are able to run around their backhand and hit a forehand when you literally hit it on the line in the ad court out wide. But if you hit a, if you hit an underhand serve, they can't run around it. And you're like, you know, they have no backhand. So
right.
It's a terrific tactic and, you know, sort of an ace up your sleeve if you need it.
Okay. So, a couple more questions for you. How many more championships do you think you have left in you at age, you're 51 now, right?
Yeah.
Yep. So what, how much gas is left in the tank?
You know, again, I love it more now than ever. I actually play more tennis, now than, you know, in probably the last 20 years just based on my health. You know, I have two hip replacements, resurfacing, and, I have actually a torn meniscus that's actually feeling a lot better. So now I'm starting to play tennis, but I'm using tennis now as a vehicle to get into better shape. I used to be able to play at 185 and now I'm, you know, 220. So, you know, I figure, you know, 30 to 50 more matches, I'll be under 200 pounds and I'll be a lot healthier. But, so I don't even care, you know, like I love talking to you about, you know, the grass courts and God willing, we'll at least, at the least, be able to play singles. But I
yeah.
feel like I'm playing better than I've ever played, because I have, you know, just learned over the years, you know, just, you know, how to take care of my equipment better and prepare, you know, for each match and peak. And so, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, with people like Mark Vecchiola who adjust the schedule so that locals can play at Mercer, that's, you know, one of my favorite places to play, or, you know, having grass courts in Philly, that's, you know, not too far away. You know, I'm just going to play and enjoy it.
The funny thing is you just mentioned grass courts and last year. So you played this guy, his name was Todd Aaron.
Yeah.
And he came up to me, I guess a day later, and he says, "Are you Mike Arenberg?" And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "I think we're related because my father changed our name from Arenberg." And then we started talking and we had a mutual, you know, cousin or something. I never followed up on it, but it was sort of bizarre. So.
Yeah.
So in closing, tell us about your program that you run over in Yardley.
Well, you know, for you know, we're going into our 19th year, but, you know, for 18 years I've had four outdoor courts and then I've used numerous indoor courts. The outdoor courts I've used for about 30 to 35 weeks, depending on the weather. And then, you know, I'll go in for anywhere from 10 to 15 weeks. Inside, whether it be, you know, various indoor facilities, and it's just been, you know, a great, you know, way to, you know, just share my love of the game and support the community, and so, you know, other than that, I've worked with all types of players, from kids who've gotten scholarships to three-year-olds to, you know, like Marty, seven-year-olds, you know, Charlie, my stepson, is actually, you know, teaching tennis for me now, and he'll give a lesson to a 70-year-old tomorrow, and that gentleman, Marty Milner, his I'm giving lessons to his grandsons, and my first lesson at Pensbury Racquet Club 25 years ago was to his son. You know, it's such a great sport, and I'm just, you know, blessed and honored to, you know, to be able to continue to do it, especially in a pandemic, because tennis is such a great sport where you can still honor social distancing and yet get some exercise, fresh air, and you know, get a little bit of normalcy back into our lives.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, hopefully next year we can all attend the dinner at the Hall of Fame and watch you go in. So I'm looking forward to that.
Me too.
Okay, buddy. Well, I appreciate you spending some time with me, and it was great talking to you.
All right, Mike. Have a great night.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye.